Good afternoon. Welcome to the live book business webinar, Digital Short Run Printing, 10 Plus Ways to Cut Costs and Drive Revenues, sponsored by OSE. OSE is a leading producer of high-speed, reliable digital print solutions with a history of more than 130 years in business. OSE is also known for its application versatility, workflow expertise, and service that it delivers across a broad range of end-to-end solutions, from cut sheet to continuous feed, monochrome to full color, and toner to inkjet. I'm Noelle Skidinski, editorial director of Book Business Magazine and the host of today's event. Digital printing and print on demand is a concept that leaves significant opportunity for misperceptions and oversimplified evaluations of its benefits. Costs can be miscalculated as they're usually based on industry's traditional cost per unit model, and opportunities for using digital printing to create new revenue is often overlooked. Digital workflows also leave substantial room for improvement as publishers try to work digital printing into their traditional workflows. So in this webinar, you'll be hearing best practices, common mistakes, and inefficiencies in digital workflows, insights and opportunities for cost savings and revenue generation from two leading experts in digital printing and print on demand, often referred to as POD. Before we get started, I need to just point out a few quick tips on how to make the most of today's live webinar. Some of you have been through this before. We're on a little bit of a new platform, though, so you might want to pay attention. First, if you have any technical difficulties, you can click on the Help widget at the bottom of the console, marked with a question mark, or let us know via the Q&A box. You can use the Q&A box also to submit your questions for today's panelists. We'll be addressing the questions at the end of the webinar and get to as many as we possibly can, but you can submit your questions at any time during the webinar. And you'll want to make sure that you turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so that you can utilize all of the widgets and bells and whistles on the console. And speaking of bells and whistles, you can click on the Tips for Attendees widget along the bottom to learn what all of the widgets on the console can do. So those of you who have been on our former platform, you might want to check out what some of those widgets do. And anyone who has not yet seen this platform, just click around, and they're pretty self-explanatory, so you can customize your experience. One of the ways that you can customize your experiences, if you can't see a chart that's displayed in a slide, for example, you can click on the slide widget on the bottom left side of your screen to resize the slide so you're better able to see it. So now on to the good stuff. I'm thrilled to have two of the most well-known and instrumental figures in digital printing with us today. First, we have Lynn Terhune, Global Digital Print Administrator of John Wiley & Sons Corporate, who has more than 20 years of production, manufacturing, and estimating experience in the publishing industry. And over the past 13 years, she's led the Wiley charge to keep books in print through the use of digital printing. In 2003, so it's obviously 8 years ago, with a whole team of IT operations, inventory, and manufacturing folks behind her, she launched the Wiley U.S. POD program, which now includes almost 15,000 titles and has grown to become a multi-million-dollar revenue opportunity for Wiley. Some of you may know Lynn is the co-author of Wiley's internal customer care resource guide, Print on Demand for Dummies. And she contributed to and edited Digital Book Printing for Dummies, now I feel like one of those, for the industry, in partnership with BISG, that's Book Industry Study Group, in 2009. And also in 2009, Book Business Magazine named Lynn to the prestigious list of the 50 top women in book publishing. Also with us is John Edwards, who assumed the role of president and COO of Edwards Brothers in 1998 and CEO in 2001. He's the fourth generation of the Edwards family to lead the 118-year-old company, which is one of the largest book and journal manufacturers in the country with 3 offset and 10 digital printing facilities in the U.S., Canada, and the U.K. And as president, John pioneered the installation and management of Edwards Brothers digital print centers in customer locations, helping customers dramatically lower freight, production, and inventory carrying costs, while at the same time giving Edwards Brothers the ability to print locally from multiple locations across the country. So welcome, Lynn and John.
Thank you.
Thank you, Noelle. Glad to be here.
We have a lot of ground to cover today, so we'll get started. Can each of you, to start, give us a brief overview of your company and its background in digital printing so our attendees have a better idea of the scope you're dealing with and your level of experience with it? Lynn, if you want to start.
Sure. Good afternoon, everyone. Let me get to the right slide. So being corporate at Wiley means that I have the privilege of working with all of our product groups as well as distribution, operations, information technology at Wiley on a worldwide basis. Wiley is a global publisher of print and electronic products. We offer texts in scientific, technical, medical, and scholarly areas, including, for example, the Cancer Journal, right on through the Journal of Zoology, as well as popular titles in veterinary medicine like the Atlas of Small Animal Ultrasonography. And we offer professional and trade books like our Popular for Dummies series, Architectural Graphic Standards, and one of my favorites, Mark Bittman's How to Cook Everything series. We also produce educational materials for undergraduate and graduate students in, just to name a few, in financial accounting, intermediate accounting, geography, and organic chemistry. We have over 5,000 employees worldwide with our operations located in, and by operations I mean offices and distribution centers, in the U.S., Europe, primarily the U.K., Canada, Asia and Singapore, Australia, and some smaller offices in other parts of the world. All right, let me get to the next slide. So our active title count, let me start with the U.S. So about 90 last year, the end of our fiscal year, and I should mention that Wiley's fiscal year runs May 1st to April 30th, but at the end of our last fiscal year, we had about almost 90,000 products available, and our electronic products, you see that almost 42,000 number, our electronic products include downloadable content, online databases, websites, ebooks, and software, but it excludes journals and subsidiary product. But on the next slide, I have our global partner numbers, and by that I mean subsidiaries. So Wiley's active global partner title count at the end of our fiscal year 11 was a little over 43,000. So we're here to talk about digital printing and what we consider our POD program is more than just POD, so we renamed it Global Demand Print, and today we have over 15,000 titles in that program, and we have a robust workflow that adds approximately 150 to 200 new titles, primarily reprints, into our primary and secondary POD print partners per month. Just to go over units and how many units we're talking about in digital print. So in the U.S. last year, Wiley brought in over 31 million units in inventory, and for our global demand print program, we produced approximately 800,000 titles in that program. It was 804,372 units to be exact, and there was another 161,000 that I can identify as also being digital printed, but not in our global demand print program. Those were digitally printed and brought into on a short-run program into the U.S. And digital printing is, as you can see, it's still a very small percentage of Wiley's overall volume. So I still have a lot of work to do.
Gives you a bit of an idea of the scope of Wiley if the digital printing portion is relatively small.
Yeah.
So, John, how about your company?
Sure. Good afternoon, everybody. My name is John Edwards. I'm president of Edwards Brothers. And as Noel mentioned, we started in 1893. We're about an $80 million company, so we consider ourselves a mid-size book manufacturer. We produce about over 40 million books a year on presses, because about 80% of our business is still traditional presses. We do about 15,000 transactions a year. Our digital footprint continues to grow, and we do about 20,000 transactions a month. Average run is 32, which means a lot of ones and a lot of 50s and 100s and 200s. And in that mix, we also produce 600 technical journals a year. We have offset manufacturing facilities in Michigan and North Carolina. We also run 8 digital printing facilities outside of our book plants. Many of those are inside traditional publishers' warehouses, so we, in essence, compress the supply chain by producing ultra-short-run 2 in micro-inventory titles on-site or 2 POD. And those are located in Perseus Books in Jackson, Tennessee, University of Chicago Press in the Chicago, Kaplan in the west side of Chicago, a town called Aurora, also Roman and Littlefield in Blue Ridge, Summit, Pennsylvania, outside Gettysburg. We also have digital plants in western Canada and Paulsboro, New Jersey, outside of Philadelphia, all digital. And we just opened a small facility in Southern California. Actually, it went live producing books this week. So we are what we call an offset and growing digital printer. Basically, it's an offshoot of what we currently do on the offset side. We've always been a short-run printer. And the way we look at it is we don't really care whether it's a digital or a web press or a sheet-fed press quantity. We just want to help the publisher produce the right quantity at the right time. So, you know, basically, if it's up to 750 copies, depending on the page count, it'll run on some kind of a digital machine. 750 to 200 is 2,000, I'm sorry, goes on a sheet-fed press, and that can go up and down depending on how busy we are. And web presses is generally 2,000 and up and sometimes lower. So the file, you know, with the advent of the digital file, the title can go anywhere depending on the quantity and what the customer demand might be. Is that a good enough background for you, Noel?
It works for me. I'd ask the attendees, but I can't hear them. So. No, I think that gives a pretty good indication of what you're doing as far as digital and what your company does overall. I want to start with talking about evaluating costs. Something that we hear a lot from publishers is that the digital printing costs more than offset printing, largely because the smaller the quantity, you know, the higher the per-unit pricing. So Lynn and John, can you both talk about the importance of evaluating what you might refer to as, I think I've heard you call it, the real cost of manufacturing and per-unit costs in determining the cost of digital printing and print-on-demand and some of the mistakes people make in evaluating those costs?
Sure. Yeah. John, you want me to take it first?
Sure.
So I should start by saying that I'm in no way saying that Wiley evaluates costs perfectly for POD, but I believe that the publishers have to consider the all-in costs, or what we've been describing as total cost of the book. Most publishers' cost models are only based on PP&B, paper printing and binding, or at least the gross margin evaluations are. And when total cost of the book should be looked at. So by total cost, I mean everything all in, returns, handling, storage, pick, pack, shipping, obsolescence, and write-off. Everything has to be considered, and and offset or a traditional model needs to be compared to digital. And then I believe on one of John's later slides, it shows the whole POD concept is based on what the customer orders versus what publishers think they might sell. So it's not a standard or traditional comparison is really not fair when you're talking about digital printing or the direct fulfillment models. John, can you add something to that?
Yeah, I can actually show that. You know, one of the things that we deal with a lot, and again, we're a short-run printer, so we're dealing in quantity. Our average run on a press is 2,000 copies or 2,200 copies. So we're not talking about mass market Tom Clancy kind of products. I mean, if you're printing 20,000, then you go to 20 copies, it's going to be a lot different in price. But what I have here is just kind of a quick vanilla example of a title that would sell, that a traditional publisher would print 750 copies and then sell it through versus printing a shorter quantity and chasing the demand. So let me look at this chart come up. So it's really an analysis of sold versus unsold. Say the slide's coming up here. So what this analysis does, as it comes up, okay, so it says you either print 750 copies of a book, and it's just a vanilla 200-page perfect bound book, so don't get hung up on the pricing or the specs too much, but this is more of a conceptual discussion. If you print 750 copies of this book, your price is $2.31 per unit, and you would spend about I can't even read it on my script, but I can read the 231. So the traditional model is the lifetime demand expected to be 750 copies. You print 750, you get a good price, and then gradually sell that title through a two-year cycle. And then it says, okay, we're not so sure about the selling cycle of this book. Let's start out by printing 400, see how it goes. If we sell more, we'll just print more. So this analysis says we printed 700, sold 400, offset, versus printing 400 and never printing that second 350 because it didn't sell. So it's an analysis on what happens to what's the cash implications of that book. Because the reality is it's not so much the unit cost, as Lynn referred to, the printed cost of the book, paper, print, and bind. It's really the total cost of the books printed divided by the number of books sold. So, for example, if you printed 750 copies and sold 400 of them, your cost per unit would be $2.31, but the actual cost per unit sold would be $4.33 because you have to take those 350 unsold units and roll into the unit price sold. Versus printing it digitally, where your unit rate was $3.60, actually higher than the offset, but you only printed 400, you only sold 400, so that's your unit rate. So this very simple example shows that if you're really not sure of the demand, you can get fooled by a low unit rate when ultimately it costs you longer in the long run.
Don, that's one of the best graphics I've ever seen explain that, the per unit sold.
Thank you.
John, you had mentioned, too, something that you had put really well when we talked earlier about the way that publishers traditionally think that they've been trained to print a large enough quantity so that they never run out and keep costs down or something, per unit costs down, whereas they need to be trained in a new way. Can you quickly mention that, if you know what I'm referring to?
Sure. Well, I call it the production manager's dilemma. You know, the traditional production manager has gotten promoted and advanced in their job because they've done a good job of keeping unit rate costs down and never running out. Because in the traditional supply chain, when a publisher runs out of books because it's selling well, the production manager is in deep trouble because they're costing the company money. Everybody knows about it. And so basically what they're being told is get the unit rate as low as you can and never run out. So that actually encourages building extra units because they're pretty cheap, those incremental units. It helps get the unit rate down, and you're never really running out of books. Well, you shouldn't anyway. And so what that does is it drives a behavior that's totally counter to what the diagram that I just went through, because it disincents publishers from doing that, because we're basically saying, here's what you do. Your unit rate's going to go up. You're going to run out some more. You're going to have emergencies, and your life is going to be better. And it's really counter to everything that they've been taught and have grown up learning. So it's a very difficult conversation to have.
Right, and as so many things are changing, it's just another way we have to kind of start thinking differently and reevaluating everything that's been done and how it's been done in the past, I guess.
Yeah, and what we talk about a lot more these days is landed cost. You know, the printing price is really important, but it's really the total landed cost to the reader of that book. And, you know, with gas prices high, freight becomes a significant part of that overall cost. And, you know, really taking into consideration all of the costs of getting that book to the publishing community's customer.
Right. That's a good point.
Okay, so you've both been involved for many years with digital printing. Can you talk about some of the best internal practices for the front-end workflow, the things that we've talked about, like automated title setup, storage in-house at publishers, ways to maximize efficiency and keep costs down?
So my advice to publishers is to take as many touches out of the process as possible and I can't say this enough, to automate as much as possible. And I know that it's easier said than done, and I've been working at this within Wiley for years. One good example that I can give is for Wiley's Global Demand Print program, our True POD program, we can push out title metadata meaning everything about that title, all the manufacturing specs, the ISBN, the page count, the author. We push that out from our system directly to our POD partner, and we receive a lot of electronic communication back from that POD partner. But just one example is that we receive, when the book goes live, when they've set up that title and they've made it live on their side, we receive a date back. Or if there's an issue with that title and it can't be set up properly, we receive an automatic communication from them, you know, saying contact your CSR or whatever. But if it does go live, it populates our system, and our system is set up to automatically switch codes in our system when a whole list of criteria have been fulfilled, that then allows our POD, our global demand print titles, allows those orders to flow when we get an order. So we're only printing after we have orders through our global demand print program.
Okay. John, did you have something you wanted to add?
Yeah, I would say that to echo what Lynn said, it's automation is the key. I mean, as soon as any of us breathe on a POD order, we're going to lose money. So you have to have the systems in place to ingest that order, produce that order, to deliver it as quickly as possible. And what Lynn said is she basically has virtual inventory, or negative inventory, because the printer holds paper and raw materials waiting for the order. And then when that order comes in, the paper is pulled, it's printed, and then it becomes a book. And so the cost of goods for Wiley are significantly lower because what they're building is already sold. That's a great concept. And you can even take that a step further into a micro-inventory model or automatic replenishment where you say, you know, for this series of books, I want to keep 25 copies on the shelf all the time so I can pick and pack and take advantage of a little economies of scale. And then when that gets down to, you know, 5 or 10 books, it triggers another order to make another box of books. And that way, it's automated. The worst mistake the publisher ever makes is printing 25 too many or whatever that reorder replenishment point is. And it's automated because, especially for a straight reprint, you know, really all we need, we as printers need, is to know four things. What's the title? How many? Where is it going? And by what method? Because there's 24 different ways to send a package in the U.S. So we don't need to know a lot to produce the order. So getting the automation in place, getting the files in the archive is really important.
It's okay. All about minimizing that inventory risk.
So I have actually a question I wanted to interject for both of you. So, Lynn, how many actual books are you talking, like, per day for Wiley that are going through this process? Like, how many orders are you submitting?
Per day?
Or if some gauge of quantity.
Let me start with for our primary POD vendor. So by that I mean the orders coming through Wiley. So we would take orders from our customers via our website or our customer service department, or orders come in through PubNet. So any normal way we would take orders. The title is coded in a way that the order routes, if it's a demand print title, the order routes the vendor. So we feed those orders to the vendor 3 times a day. So the orders kind of batch up, and then they go to the vendor 3 times a day. So we are taking thousands of orders per day, and in fact, we've also initiated a weekend send of orders. So if the print partner is up and running on the weekend, they can also take those then. But the numbers I do have are last fiscal year 11. And this is how robust our system is. We easily handled 62,445 orders automatically through our system with minimal touches. And that included, those 62,000 orders included 165,116 lines for a total, and this is drop ship in the U.S., a total of 529,000 units. But again, minimal touching of those orders. Once in a while we'll have an issue, and there are people set up internally to monitor those orders, but it's not anybody's full-time job.
Okay. That kind of relates, I mean, partially with Wiley's scale, it seems that there's more benefit potentially than for some smaller companies, which is my question for probably John. Like, how does it work for smaller publishers who might be working on a print-on-demand model as far as shipping costs, adding in based on your, per unit cost analysis, if they're shipping, single titles out or very small quantities more often, as opposed to bulk shipping, a certain number, are you incurring additional costs because of your shipping smaller quantities, or is that not a factor?
I think it all depends, because for many people, we do both of those things that you described. So, one of the things we're trying to do is with our multiple locations is trying to physically manufacture the book closer to the end customer. So what we're working on is if it's a book that's POD title going to New York City, we want to try to figure out a way to get that file into our New Jersey location to make it there. Because then we get overnight service at ground rates, in essence, because we're so close to the customer. So that's part of the calculation now, which we never paid attention to before. I mean, I grew up in an environment where we would make – all I cared about was putting books in a box and putting them on a pallet and getting the pallet into the publisher's warehouse, where they did that, broke it down, bundled it with other shipments. The other thing is a lot of orders are one-off to one person, but a lot of them are multiples to one location. So where we're producing in the publisher's warehouse, we may be making a dozen different titles that go on a pallet with 30 other orders that are being bundled and shipped together as one, because a lot of the wholesalers don't like to get multiple shipments on the same order. So the ability to have that flexibility of not holding inventory and building it on demand in conjunction with some of the faster-selling titles that are being bought on the traditional offset press really lowers the net landed cost of that whole order, even though we may have 12 books on a 2,000-copy shipment that we produced. But for the mid-size, and you're right, Lynn has a critical mass to do a lot of things with her title list. I think it's intimidating for a lot of the mid-size publishers just getting going. How do you get started? What do you do? And, what we encourage people to do is the first thing you got to do is get the archive built and into a central location so you can have a place to point the orders to and adjust the orders and get them turned around. In a number of cases, we are still, believe it or not, scanning books into the archive because there's no file that exists. It might even be in film, or the file is so old it's not any good, to just get the file into the archive so it can be ordered, even if it's a traditional digital 200-copy run that goes on a pallet and goes to the warehouse. And helping people get over that, get their hands around it, make it cost-effective to get it done. And so, it's hard to do a program with three titles. But if somebody has a pretty good-sized backlist, you can put together – we put together programs for people to gradually get those titles into the archive and working together to do that in a cost-effective way.
Okay, great. And, John, while you're talking, I'll have you continue with another question. You've touched on a little bit of this, but from the printer's perspective, what mistakes and inefficiencies do you see that are common among publishers, and how can publishers improve the digital workflow?
Well, all our customers are perfect, and we love them.
Of course.
But with that said, you know, I think that that the first thing is really understanding the total landed cost of the book, or really understanding the total cost of inventory. I think for me, in the last 5 years, I've become less of a printer and more of a warehouse and inventory and shipping expert. And I've been doing a lot of helping publishers do a lot of analysis on their inventory. And in a number of cases, and kind of on an average basis, I've seen inventory levels that are 15, 17, 20% of their inventory is more than 3 years old, and which is a direct result of a bad print decision made 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago. And, you know, that's back to the old paradigm of it's easier to build a few extra and get the cost down because those incremental units are cheap. But the reality is they're not. And as those units sit in inventory, that's actually a cost center because the likelihood of a sale are shrinking as every day goes by, and it's in essence been overbuilt. And you hear huge numbers of books being pulped every year, and that's, I think, a big mistake. But it's all around, you know, getting that unit rate down, never running out. Well, with that kind of inventory, we shouldn't be running out very much. And I think that getting people to understand that it might cost more per unit but less overall is a good thing.
Okay.
I agree.
We talked before the webinar about some new ways that publishers can maximize the use of digital printing to cut inventory costs, exploring a move toward a transactional print model and micromanagement system that advises and orders optimal quantities. Can you explain this and how it can benefit publishers?
I'll take that one. So in my opinion, with digital print vendors able to offer certainly more than they did years ago, lower pricing for shorter runs, and publishers ordering hopefully less inventory but more often, publishers should have a way or a system to determine what their optimal inventory holding is or should be. And if titles are set up with print vendors correctly, then the vendor should be able to pull in the order and automatically route the order to their digital print engines, and then cuts down on turnaround times and costs. So it should, publishers should get their books faster if all the print vendor is doing is pulling in that order, what I consider transactional printing. They're just pulling in the order. They're not stopping the order. They're not pre-flighting it. All that, the pre-flight, some of it's been done on the publisher side, and maybe there still is some done on the vendor side. But once the title is set up, if there's an order that comes through, all the vendor has to do is pull in that order and go to their digital print engine.
Okay. John, did you want to add anything?
No, I think she did. I think she did great there.
Okay. What are some unique ways that you have seen, Lynn, either at your company or among other publishers, and John, among your customers, that unique ways publishers are using digital short-run printing or print-on-demand to drive revenue?
Well, the whole concept of POD is having persistent availability of product in as many channels as possible to drive and sustain revenue. So no one, you know, for example, no one likes to be in an out-of-stock situation or a backorder situation. So the whole concept of, only printing after you have the order, I mean, that's what this is all about. But we, over the last few months, I've had interest in working on projects to also use POD, digital printing, to keep electronic product available. So we have electronic product called Rocks Blocks and also Fromu Shortcuts that we are now developing and offering in e-only and POD only. So they'll never hit any of our distribution centers. They will only be offered in e-only and POD only. And we've done this in POD for higher ed supplements for the last few years, where we wanted to offer higher ed supplements online only, but I think it was some of the professors that pushed back and demanded print versions, so we now offer them online and then also POD.
Would you consider it to be a useful option for books that, well, obviously they might start out digital as e-books, but also for whether they're e-books or print books that have kind of a very, very targeted market, or possibly custom books?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. It's a perfect model for that.
Okay. John, have you seen anything among your customers in particular in ways that they're using it to drive new revenue?
I think that you describe what's possible. I haven't seen much of it in terms of customization. It's so much more possible now. And you see that a lot in the college custom space with the course pack business and custom publishing textbooks. That area that really didn't exist, many years ago. So it's a powerful way to leverage the content that already exists. But one of the questions you asked is what are people doing differently? I think one of the things that we're seeing is our customers are starting to pay attention to where are the books being sold, and we know where they're being made, but who's buying them, and starting to look at not only in the U.S. but worldwide, who are our customers and where are they, and is there a way to produce those titles in the countries that they're actually being bought? I know Lynn's been working on this specifically with Wiley, and so one of the things that we've worked on is with we put together what we call our Global Print Solutions Program. It's called GPS, and we partner with printers in the UK, which is CPI, Marcono in Singapore, and Griffin in Australia, where we can ingest a file on behalf of a customer in the US and have it produced in Australia or one of the other three locations, have one invoice, pay us in US dollars, and we handle everything behind the scenes. And so today it's more of a, I need to have, 50 copies made in, this thing just jumped ahead on me. How'd that happen? Where, for example, a customer may say, I want 200 copies in Australia, and we can do that for them. And I envision a day where a book will be placed starting in the U.S., and it's 1,000 units that the publisher wants made, and we'll make 600 in the U.S., 200 in the UK and 100 in the other two countries, and it has immediate distribution at the same time, where in the past it was produced 1,000 copies in one location, sent to the distribution center, and then sent out worldwide. And it's a true example of just-in-case inventory. I've got to get units all over the world just in case I sell them. Mm-hmm. And this is more of a just-in-time approach, where you can really decide the quantity at the last possible moment to be more in sync with the expected demand. And if you're wrong, you can go make more. And, we're doing a lot of work for UK-based publishers who are selling English language products in the U.S. who have U.S. distribution centers, where they're, instead of making it in the U.K. and shipping it, they're just sending the files to us and we're producing the books for them here. So that's back to the landed cost discussion. I mean, it's not only the printed cost, but it's the elimination of freight and speed. So the net cost per unit spent and sold is lower.
Okay. Yeah, I imagine the savings alone from being able to print where you're distributing would be significant. I mean, the magazine publishing industry does drop shipping so that they're actually bulk shipping to save money on the more they send to a certain location and deliver from that local or regional postal distribution center. It's kind of that same kind of concept. And then co-palletizing with other publishers so that if they don't have enough to make up a bulk shipment, they're working with other publishers to do the same. And this pretty much cuts everything right out. You just have the book printed and it's there. So.
Yeah, it's a good concept. In the book world, it gets a little more complicated because even though the U.S. and the U.K., we always laugh that we are two countries divided by a common language. We have very different trim sizes, slightly different papers, slightly different machines, and so getting everything to look the same it takes a lot of work.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to probably ask one more question, and then we'll take some of the questions from the audience that have come in. How can printers maximize the use of short-run printing to grow their business, and how can they better serve their current and prospective publishing customers? So, John, I guess this would really be for you. And, Lynn, you can feel free if you have some suggestions for the printers, obviously, chime in.
How can we help our customers? Is that what the question was? I'm sorry.
Yeah, how can printers better serve current and prospective publishing customers with short-run digital printing and offering print on demand, and how can printers maximize that to grow their businesses?
Well, I think the first thing we have to do as a printing community is just change the language. I mean, we have a lot of discussion about POD, digital, short-run, offset, web. I mean, the reality is it's just short-run printing, and then how we produce it. We have to produce a high-quality product at a good price. But let's stop getting hung up on how it's physically made. I mean, ultimately, the publisher needs what they want, the quantities what they want when they want it. And so we spend a lot of time just arguing about what's the right machine, what's the right material to use, et cetera. And really that's our job as a manufacturing community to figure that part out. And what I think we need to do is make it easy to get into a program. So that is getting files into the program, making that an easy process, spending the time with the IT groups, building an EDI interface. And sometimes it's an education process from our side, helping the smaller mid-sized publisher do it, or conforming to the existing system that the publisher already has, IT system. And then being committed at high levels to making it work. I mean, there's going to be some bumps in the road. One of the issues is, if it's an offset title and it's moving right to a POD module, and it was a sewn dust jacketed product with stamping, intricate stamping and foil stamping on the dust jacket, that has to be made a little bit more vanilla to fit in the digital model. And getting over the hurdle of the book maybe looking slightly different, and the bottom line is we're just trying to help the publisher figure out how to keep it in print in a cost effective way. And so some of those kinds of discussions are hard to have because, we're really not involved with the design stage of a product, and now we're getting involved with here's how you need to do it, here's how you need to look at it, because not all the papers run digitally today, but a good number of them do. So getting your hands around the specs, getting files in the system, building the EDI interface, and understanding how it does save money long term, it's not easy to do.
If I can just add a couple things, I mean, this is a list. Some of these things we've already gone over, but publishers, print vendors, and even to the extent of equipment manufacturers. So those manufacturers of the digital print equipment need to work together and be smarter at delivering content to customers and improving the supply chain. We talked about shorter runs more often to match sales, and publishers need to create internal tools to handle that with less manual touches. There has to be an easier way to distribute files and title metadata in one package, and it has to be easier to set up titles at various vendors. Print locally, John talked a lot about. Print vendors must invest in ways to make it easier to do business with, similar to what John has done. And vendors must invest in the latest print and bind equipment to drive costs down per page and increase quality and turnaround times. I mean, in everyone, publisher, print vendor, equipment manufacturer, everybody has to innovate to take advantage of this technology.
Okay, thank you. Before we actually take questions, I wanted to make sure we got to this. Lynn and John both, very fortunately for us, put together their list of kind of summarizing the 10 ways to cut costs and drive revenue. Do you each want to kind of quickly run through those? We've got about 15 minutes left, so we'll still have some time for questions from the audience, but I wanted to make sure that you did get a chance to get to these.
Sure, I can start, but I want to just pop this one up here real quick. This is one that might go back to the question you asked last time, Noelle, and it didn't work. The questions to consider when you're thinking about getting into this. This is slide number 21. Let me try that again. Push to audience. Okay. You know, when you're thinking about whether this is right for you, I mean, the questions to consider is how many titles, how do you decide how many to preprint? And when you order it, how long do you want it to last? And then look at how many units you have in inventory and how many units is that. So this is really an exercise of understanding what you have in inventory. Do you have orders that you're holding onto that you can't fill because you don't have product? That's a quick fix for POD. What is the value of telling an author their title will never go out of print? I mean, it can be in print but doesn't exist with a POD program. What are you paying per year to inventory your books? I mean, we hear numbers between 25 cents and 50 cents per unit per year to carry it. That's part of your cost. And then how do you quantify the cost of space when putting books back into storage? That would be for people who have their own warehouses, and a number do. Taking that to the next step is in terms of 10 ways to cut costs. I think Lynn and I have some overlap here, so I didn't steal from her on this list, if you're wondering. You know, lower print run, print fewer books more often. Consider fully landed costs. We said this before. You know, how much does it cost to get that book to your customer? Convert to virtual inventory. Just because it's virtual doesn't mean you can't fill an order. Automate ordering to reduce transaction costs, EDI, or we have what's called a one-touch reprint ordering program. Minimize changes to the files after first printing to avoid prep charges. So almost a zero-touch archive. You can make changes, but every time you do, it's a touch. Make it easy to print digitally. Standardize the trims and the materials so they can move into the program easier. Convert cloth covers to printed case or paperbacks. You can still do a printed case digitally, POD, but it's more expensive. Consider the total relationship with your partner. Greater volumes equals better terms. Find a print partner who can help you manage the inventory, the life of the title. Start with an offset press and have it be handled through the life of that title. And consider in-house warehouse printing the solution. Those are mine.
All right, let me push mine out now. And it's funny that John and I did not consult prior to this on our list. Many of these I've covered, but you know, total cost of the books we've covered. There's a lot of detail. We could have a whole, fill a whole hour, another webinar on minimizing transactions and automating. Standardizing, by that I mean, you might need to standardize trims or, you know, as John said, go from case to paper in some cases. Building volume, by that I meant, you know, work with a couple of different digital print vendors, but focus on, depending on the size of your company, focus on one or two to build volume and have negotiating power. And, you know, that hasn't changed from the traditional offset days. Working with digital print partners. So a lot of these processes are, you know, 10 years new to all of us, and you have to be a little bit more patient than the traditional models. And if you work with your digital print partner, and you can get what you need for your company. You know, depending on what your company's needs are, you just have to work with the sales rep and internal folks to meet your company's needs. John, this is something we talked about the other day, keeping the customer in mind. Where the whole idea is delivering the content that the customer wants to them when they want it, no matter what it is. So I talk a lot internally within Wiley about quality. Yes, quality is important, but is the customer going to notice if it's a if it's printed in the UK on a slightly creamier shade of tech stock than the whiter shade in the US? I don't know. You just have to keep the customers in mind and try to give them what they want and keep inventory available. We talked a little bit about an archive. So you know, try to do what you can to create an archive workflow that makes sense for your company, minimizing touches and corrections to files, and creating workflows that make sense for your company.
Okay, great. Thanks, Lynn. And just a reminder to attendees, you can print out the slides, you know, for future reference. So I want to get to as many of the questions as we can in the time that we have left. One that has pretty much been the most common question that people have, it's focused on the costs, which is most often the biggest issue in trying to you know, conceive of a model using digital printing. How does a publisher demonstrate in accounting terms or for the P&L the lower overall costs due to lower inventory write-downs? So, John, I know you addressed this in kind of your cost per unit evaluation, but it's something obviously enough people had questions on. Maybe you could kind of specifically address that
part
of it.
It's a good question, and one of the remote sites that we run, the publisher was able to run their inventory a lot tighter, and they took their write-downs from 3% to 1.75% after a year, after 18 months. One of the issues we see is, in a number of cases, the production people that we deal with, they don't own that part of the P&L, and so it's not that important to them. And so you need to have the CFOs or the financial people involved in the discussions. So you know, how you demonstrate it, you have less obsolescence. That's the purest metric, and the problem is it's a bit of a leap of faith because it'll take you 18 months till you know if it's working.
Okay. Here's a quick question. Do you have a page count break as well as an overall book order count that you look at to determine whether POD makes sense or not, or really digital printing? I guess either one of you really could answer that.
For us, the only limitation you have on page count is will the binding line be able to handle it, and it's actually a little bit lower on the digital side. You know, you can have a POD order that's 500 copies, so that doesn't really, you know, so that's where we get hung up on how we describe it. But for us, generally we run our digital machines up to about 500 copies. If the page count's lower, it can go higher. Our sheet fed presses kick in at that point, and then at about 1,500, the web presses are most productive. Now, with that said, if we're busier, we'll raise the minimums on the webs, and if we're slower, we'll lower the minimums. So it's kind of a moving target.
Right. And what about trim sizes?
You know, when we started as an offset book manufacturer. So as we got into digital, we just had to be able to do everything we could do on a press. So we have no limits on trim size.
Yeah, there are some vendors out there that do have standardized trim sizes, and if you're talking about a company like Wiley that has content in the U.S. and the U.K., trim sizes are different. So that has been an issue, but most of our digital print vendors can now offer most of our standard trim sizes.
Okay.
And there is automation out there where, especially for perfect bound books specifically, where a barcode can tell that I can do one book at a time, and the barcode will tell the trimmer what's coming and what trim size it is. So it's not always special make readies either like it used to be.
Okay. We only have a couple minutes left, so I'm going to try to squeeze in. There's so many questions coming in. Related to what we were just talking about, with costs obviously dependent on page count, are you seeing a trend in shortening books, lowering page counts, and, using different economical formats to optimize price per unit. I mean, the magazine publishing industry, there was a big trend toward this of lowering page counts and eliminating out of circulation kind of ancillary subscribers or people who weren't paying, like promo lists, that kind of thing. Are you seeing trends like that in book publishing, printing?
I am not.
No, I'm not either, except for the e-books I mentioned. You know, the first one that we did, the first Rocks Box we did, I believe, was about 28 pages, but I don't think that was done on purpose, but, you know, page count.
Right. Okay. John, this is a question I thought was interesting. The book centers that you have inside of other inside of your customers' locations, like the Roman Littlefield location, are you also doing producing books for other publishers besides the customer that has, like, besides the Roman Littlefield or whatever customer you have the facility in?
Generally, yes. I mean, we have a commitment, a daily capacity commitment to our in-plant customers. That gets taken care of first, and then we can if we have excess capacity, we do make that available.
Okay. How has color capability and quality improved, if it has, in fact?
I would say when we started over 10 years ago, the digital color was terrible. Most of the covers were on colored paper with a black type to make it look like two colors. So I would say the color, especially for the covers, has come a long way. I mean, right now it's difficult to tell the difference between an offset and a digital color cover. It's coming along on the text as well. The toner base is really very good.
Okay. John, there's also a couple of questions on covers. Are there restrictions on what types of covers publishers can use? And one person specifically asked about using foil and a different type of, I guess, embossing and effects. What are your limitations there?
You know, you can do anything, but it's expensive and it takes time. And so I would say 99%, maybe 99.9% of the digital covers that we do not get foil or any special decorating beyond film lamination or matte lamination.
Okay. And how do you handle bindery and finishing considering different run lengths?
How do we handle binding and finishing? You know, for perfect bound digital products, it's all bound in their digital centers on smaller binding lines. If it's a hard bound book and it's up to 50 copies, we do it. It's a pretty manual process. We do it in the digital book centers. If it's over 50 copies, it gets moved to our high-end finishing lines in the manufacturing area in Ann Arbor and North Carolina because it's faster.
Okay, I think we have time for one more question here. Unfortunately, I'd love to get to them all. So sheet-fed press manufacturers are responding to what this person refers to as the digital press threat. I'm sure many offset manufacturers refer to it as that. But they're developing presses with lower make-readies. What are printers doing to balance the new capabilities of digital presses and the new capabilities of offset presses?
Well, all of the talk today is about digital presses replacing the sheet-fed presses. I think the jury's still out on economically if that's true. But if you can eliminate plates and get ink or toner on paper faster, it's just which one's faster and cheaper. And I think the jury's still out.
Okay, great. Unfortunately, we're going to have to wrap things up now. I apologize. We could not get to all the questions that were submitted. There were just too many. And on behalf of Book Business, I want to thank our speakers, Lynn and John, for joining us today and sharing their insights, very valuable insights on things happening in digital printing and sharing their tips for our attendees. And I'd like to thank our sponsor, OSE, who made it possible for us to bring this webinar to you for free. And, of course, thank you for attending today's webinar. And be sure to check out our webinar page on bookbusinessmag.com to get information on all of our archived and upcoming webinars. And if you would take just a minute to fill out the brief feedback survey, you'll see it appear on your screen. We'd really appreciate your feedback. Really influences the webinars that we bring to you in the future. And I hope to see you at the next book business webinar and at our publishing business virtual conference on October 27th. So mark your calendars and keep an eye out in your email inbox for more information on that. So thank you very much and have a great rest of your day.